Neither can you of Earth comprehend how crude are the most advanced of Earth's denizens of the higher spheres. 525. In apparel, we have no jewels nor particular raiment in mark of distinction, but our soul attainments do sparkle forth in brilliant coruscations, our everlasting harmonies. But we present emblematical jewelry and decorated raiment to you as a very limited expression of soul scintillations at our homes in the spirit world. And this beautiful, glorious, all-radiant celestial messenger vanished from our sight. 526. And the artist came forth, and in his usual manner made a picture of this heavenly messenger. Picture, number 17. 528. Evolution in conversation. Before going into seance room, some of the members of the circle used the word evolution as it is generally understood to signify. When Dr. Sahus intimated that he was never satisfied with that word as generally used, he said that he could not see how there could be evolution without there first being involution, and suggested that, to his mind, the word development or unfoldment would be better. Some other person could not see how development or unfoldment could occur unless there be some innate thing to develop or unfold, therefore these words would be as objectionable on the same ground, and this led up to some discussion of form building and form modification, and the sequel shows that some of the spirit band took cognizance of the discussion, and during the seance an essay was dictated by some of this intellectual band to our spirit amanuensis, Wesley Eber, in which the word evolution is used, but in verbal explanation the spirit said, "We are somewhat like the doctor, but know of no better term to use at present." And the following is the writing, 529. For the benefit of disputants of either class, we observe that atoms, in their ability to change from one form to another, always follow the law of definite proportions, and in obedience to the law are amenable to the will of intelligent manipulation, but outside of the operation of this law, they are incapable of being controlled by any known mentality in existence. This would place them beyond the category of mind power, and to some extent, superior to it in their nature, for the mentality of the wisest of Earth is deficient in ability to create new laws, although it can avail itself of the primitive forces to construct forms in almost numberless variety. Can it therefore be inferred that the nature of atom is capable of comprehension by the human intellect, and is there in any expression of its powers a clue to lead you to an intelligible explanation of its nature? 530. We would say that the atom centers in itself the properties of all forms and conditions of existence. It is the central point from which all creative energy proceeds, and it is the basis of all power that manifests form or force. It is indestructible in its natural properties, and it holds in itself the key to unlock the portals of eternal existence, for it is eternal by nature. R. V. 1240-1243, A. It goes and comes by definite and fixed laws, and all the forms into which it enters are held in existence as forms, by the inherent energy of the atoms composing them. The atom alone has the claim to eternal duration of forms, for it alone has the power to enter and dominate all other forms. It exercises its power without any master except force, and to force alone is it amenable. Whether force precedes it or is contemporaneous with it may not be certainly asserted by the knowledge of man, but, probably, force which impels the atom upon its course with unerring precision may precede it in the province of creative evolution. 531. Beyond the atom is an intelligence that has imbued it with these properties and powers, and is so much beyond the province of human mentality as to be outside the range of definite thought, and it remains for human ignorance to be silent in its presence. The world is a resultant of this intelligent creative power, and it becomes amenable to analysis, and comprehensible by intelligences of evolutionary types, for it only needs increase of the mentality to raise the intellectual powers of man above the plane of directed forces, and in that progressive revolution of intellect whereby the human race has already attained supremacy over the mechanical forces. 532. Man feebly exhibits the image of wisdom, and boastingly asserts his intellectual superiority over the rest of visible creation. But he is ever subject to the power vested in the atom, and only as he reflects the activity of the elements in his own structure, is he able to rise to an intellectual status whereby he can comprehend the more simple manifestations of constructive energy. 533. The world does not reflect blind force alone in its own evolutionary development, but it has a continual reproduction of its previous conditions. It also has an additional development of powers that reflect more and more positively the intelligence that belongs to a higher order than physical life, which serves to lift humanity to a higher plane, and place them upon a more lofty platform of intellectual observation and development, for therein is coming before you evidences of the power of the invisible world to the nature of force and matter in its relations to both spheres of being. 534. It is for this reason that you are obliged to take into serious consideration the existence of invisible intelligences that understand how to manipulate the forces that pertain to evolution of the world of spirit. That they exist, certain phenomena have absolutely demonstrated beyond the power of question, and that the higher intelligences understand how to affect these forces in form, is neither absurd nor chimerical. It is the degree of intelligence that limits your power to manipulate the elements that come within a certain sphere of your physical conditions. 535. Your power may be slow or rapid, according to the degree of power you can develop in the physical life, but the great forces are ever at your disposal, and you can go forward upon the plane of earthly or spiritual life regardless of the powers of craft or the opposition of ignorance. 536. As you ascend into the scale of conscious intelligence, the universe opens your mental vision, and gives you the basis of a scientific conception of the powers that underlie the physical universe. When you consider this law of nature in all that pertains to the visible and invisible form, you can see how rational the probability that the great law of life has its existence again in the vast realm from which they once came through the long periods, as we count time, of evolution. Continued at paragraph 543-1 Seance number 32 October 19, 1902 537. Prior to opening seance, the circle engaged in discussing the question of thought transference, some contending that there is no such thing as thought transference, that what is so called is thought impression, imprinting, or thought image. Some were of opinion that thoughts being things, as the spirits have often told us, the image of a thought is imprinted on the psychic ether or spiritual sensorium, in the same manner as images of external objects are pictured on the retina, and thus, the spirit, by regular intermediates, recognizes the image. It was conceded that similarity of thought of one person is often recognized by some other one at a distance, and it seemed the prevailing idea that this is accomplished by means of a third person, this third person being a spirit messenger who observing the image of thought in the psychic ether of the first person is enabled to travel and come into the realm of the psychic ether of the second person, and make the thought image of number one in the psychic ether of number two, as set out in R.V. and B.V. But yet some were not able to understand how thoughts are things, and then as soon as the regular order of business was completed, the spirit Professor Denton said, 538. I hope you have your dispute settled. It seems that we cannot say anything, but it will raise a question. And Denton yielded the floor to Wesley, who said, 539. Friends, thoughts are things. If not things, they are nothings, which is tantamount to saying that thought does not exist. If you make a draft of a house, your draft is an image of the thought house, which was in your mind before you made the draft. Then the house constructor builds a house in the shape of the thought that was in your mind before you made the draft. You see a certain vessel which is used for holding water, and you name the vessel bucket. The image of that bucket is on your mind, and when you hear the word bucket, your mind recognizes the vessel you named, or that someone told you about having the name bucket. You use the word bucket in hearing of 1,000 people who have seen or known of the same bucket, and every person of that 1,000 will perceive in his mind the exact image of that bucket. The word bucket is not in the image of the bucket, but when spoken refers the mind of the hearer who has seen the bucket to the image of the bucket as it is indelibly printed on or in his psychic ether. Drafts are things, images are things, emblems of other things. From these drafts, images, and emblems of things the mind constructs the particular thing in psychic ether, and this psychic house, bucket or other thing is the thought, and outwrought in material form is the shape and counterpart of the spiritual thought, and vice versa. 540. Herein, then, I hope you will be able to see that thoughts are things, and that what is called thought transference is not such at all, but is the construction of an image of the thought of it upon or in the cognizable psychic ether of B, from which B's mind constructs in his own mind a thought similar to the thought of A. 541. When you wish to convey a message, the image of the message on your mind or psychic ether is seen by a spirit messenger, and by that messenger pictured on the psychic ether or mind of the recipient. So thought transference is simply the bearing of an image of the thought of one person, by a spirit, and reproducing that image on the mind or psychic ether of the recipient. 542. Do you know what a wonderful condition would be required for a thought to leave one person and start out on a journey alone and go direct to another person 1,000 miles distant, and be caught by that other person? If thoughts traveled around loose in the air that way, how would a criminal reach his victim? All would know each other's thoughts and there would be, Red Feather interpolated the words, a hot time in the old town tonight. And immediately Wesley took his position as amanuensis to receive a dictation on evolution, continued from close of paragraph 536, as follows, to wit, evolution 543. It is a pity that the superstitions of this age should defy the wisdom of such writers and account their knowledge divine in its source, but as ignorance of original truth sits enthroned in our colleges of learning and childish speculation, as of divine authority, it is not to be considered strange that the wiser observation and deduction of the ancient astronomers should be held by them as sacred oracles, so incompetent are your modern wiseacres to provide reliable oracles of their own. In proof of this, they point to certain ancient writings as reliable prophecies of the certainty of the truth of their theories. It is, indeed, a pity that the prophecies should be unfulfilled if they are the oracles of the supreme ruler of the universe. 544. There are some daring flights of fancy that the astronomical chemist may safely indulge in, when he brings the universe to be weighed in the scales of his laboratory and the secrets of life to the crucible of his exact analysis. His vision there is not bounded by the merely technical results, for in death and sublimation of compounds, he discovers the key to unlock the problems of infinity itself, and finds that death, destruction of form, is only a step in the process of life, and the development of more perfect form, and through that principle, he perceives that matter is as infinite in its properties of form, as force is indestructible in its nature, and upon this, he proceeds to explore the realms of eternal existence. He can trace its origin to the realm of eternal principles acting through definite and absolute law. 545. The earth has been too long gestating and being fitted for life, to be sent into oblivion by a whirlwind of fire, or drowned out of existence by a deluge of water. Either of these conditions might put an end to life, it is true, but their effect would be local rather than general. There is only one way possible in which life could become extinct, that would be by raising the elements in it to the gaseous state, which might release the atoms in the compound from their present relations, but that process will be ages in progress ere the earth would be annihilated. It is more likely of the secondaries, and they, in turn, will pass from its environment with little immediate effect upon its destiny. Yet there will be some influence upon its ultimate extinction, for they must take some of the force locked in the embraces of the visible universe when they depart to the invisible, and thus the time may come when the extraction of the latent powers of your planet, by the process of the life and death of its inhabitants, will leave it so enfeebled that it will no longer produce life or sustenance to support life as it does now. The same laws prevail upon the lower plane that do upon the higher. 546. We have often heard the question asked as to who made God? The assertion was made by scriptural teachers that God made the world, but that question has never been satisfactorily answered. It has been asserted that God made himself, a startling proposition to the unsophisticated mind, but one that contained within itself the germ of a mighty truth, for in the universal consciousness of being there is no recognition of any external force that is creative in itself, but that all force in the organism, by which form and life are manifested, exists in the inherent energy of the elements composing it, and that, herein, at last the form makes itself. 547. Spiritual science is abundantly able to determine the truth or falsity of the revelation business, and to reveal the truth to the world as fast as it is discovered, and you may confidently expect that there will be no revelations in this or future ages of the world that do not belong to this science. CI 59 and 1142-1191. A typewriting. This is signed Wilson, and we presume it to be E. V. Wilson. We have our typewriting machine repaired a little, and new ribbon in, so that the operator can make 200 to 250 words per minute. The following are the words of this writing, to wit, 548. You ask, why is it that a great many of the medium's guides take a delight in the beautiful things of earth? There are two reasons for this, as far as I have investigated. One is, that some of the spirits have not yet learned the beauties of the spirit spheres, and to them the things of earth are not only beautiful but contain many lessons. Another is, that spirits who are perfectly familiar with the spirit spheres are pleased to see the progress of those upon earth whom they are so much interested in. You are surrounded daily by spirits who gain a clearer insight into life by the observations they are thus able to make. It is essential that all spirits should acquire as much knowledge as possible, not because it is considered a power, for knowledge is not power any more than electricity is force. It is the application of knowledge that gives it power. If we are to lead others, we must first be led ourselves. 549. I will relate a little story that will illustrate just what I am trying to make you comprehend. Many years ago, the path to spirit life, from a rude mountain hut, a woman, unlettered, but with an abundance of common sense that took the place of learning. She had never journeyed beyond the confines of her mountain neighborhood, and when she awoke in the spirit world, she could not believe that it was a counterpart of the world in which she had dwelt so long upon earth. The mountains she had lived among were full of untold beauty. The mountain spring held no poetical fancies for her. It did not whisper to her of the many things it hoped to see on its journey to the river. It was to her a nice place to cool her milk and slake her thirst. The tall pines and firs whispered not of health and strength, but were regarded as so much available firewood to warm the cabin on bleak winter days. The distant horizon did not speak to her of many mysteries that lay out in the world, but appealed to her as so many miles of weary travel. She was not a bad woman, but faithfully performed every duty that came to her, yet she would often wonder if she would be shut out from the joys of heaven. She could not imagine how the golden streets of heaven would look, as paved streets were unknown to her. A natural world was so far beyond any conception she had ever had of heaven that she would not believe that she was in the spiritual world. 550. What did we do with such a spirit? We took her to visit many places upon earth, and after a while, we discovered someone she had known upon earth who lived in a comfortable city home, and she could not talk to Jimmy. She soon understood that the heaven she had prayed so earnestly for was not very different from many earth homes. She enjoyed the many strange things she saw about her friend's home, and soon learned to be an efficient worker in the spirit spheres. She has learned to conduct other spirits about on the earth plane, showing and explaining things to them. There is more to learn in the everyday life on earth than man will be able to grasp in the few years allotted to him. Don't sigh for the spirit world, but enjoy every passing minute the beauties of your world, and help others to enjoy its beauties also. Signed, Wilson. The Justice Seekers at Typewriting, dictated by Dr. Reed, to wit, 551. The Justice Seekers are a band of spirits who have existed for ages in the spirit world. There is not a courtroom or legislative hall in all your broad land that has not been visited by these wearers of well-balanced scales. If they have only partially succeeded in their work for humanity, it is not because they have neglected, in any way, their numerous duties, but because they have so many undeveloped souls to deal with, both in and out of material bodies. You, I am sure, would not look for much spirituality in the ordinary politician, and yet these spirits do not grow discouraged in their work. They're anxious to do away with legal murder, hanging. They see how savage man's nature is when he would hang a fellow creature, commit a wrong, trying to right wrong. How absurd it is when you give the matter careful study. A poor cringing wretch, who has allowed his depraved desires to overcome him, waiting for other men, perhaps no better at heart than himself, to say when the thread of his life shall be broken. Men who, in their ignorance, daring to deprive another of something they can, under no circumstances, replace, the breath of life. 552. Perhaps his poor old mother sits there in trembling, waiting for the judge to pronounce the words that will deprive her child of his earthly life. No doubt she has loved him the most, because he has needed her love the most, just as the tree that is weak needs the tender care of the gardener. She thinks of him as a sweet innocent child, for what mother grows to think deep in her heart of her children otherwise than as a little child who needs her guidance? How eagerly she watches the face of the judge, trying to read the verdict before the jury returns. 553. Friends, we beseech you not to be guilty of sentencing a man to death. Try and formulate some plan by which he can realize the position he holds to society at large, or if he does not realize the enormity of his crime, no real good can be accomplished, for he, and not you, is the one to be reached. He must drink to the dregs the bitter cup of remorse, before he can understand the sorrow he has brought to others. 554. We are pleased with the many steps forward those upon earth have taken in the last quarter of a century. We are glad to see so many reforms in prison work, but we desire to see the laws of the country so altered that all may receive justice as far as it is possible for one to give justice to another. Signed, Dr. Reed. Then there came a lady form which said, "My name is Arabella, 521, 555. I am she whose picture was given you the other evening, and who gave you the whispered message." Then a man having a long white robe about him was announced by the controls as being a Greek. Another of similar appearance and attire gave his name as Demosthenes, and spake in a very impressive, euphonistic voice, rather broken at first, but shortly in good clear English utterance, saying, 556. We turn to the earth conditioned to prove to humanity, as far as they can receive it, that we continue to be personalities as when on earth. I would say to you, however, that there is treachery all around you, but I will throw protection all about you. And I would say again, that you should cherish this immortal fact of life beyond the grave to which you consign the body, and the great fact too, that the man does not enter a born whence, as so many people of your world mournfully say, no traveller returns, but as having entered a born of greater activity, with power of return when duty calls. But I am not bound to earth, can tarry but a moment, I must go now, but remember us in hailing distance, able and willing to throw protection all around you. Seance number 33, October 19, 1902. 557. Just before time for opening exercises, Dr. Sahus submitted five different problems in conduct of persons, one towards another, on account of any injury done to another. How is the injurer punished in the following cases, if intentional, and the other knows from whence it comes? If unintentional, and the other knows from whence it comes? If unintentional, and the other does not know from whence it comes? If one is not conscious of injuring another, and the other approves of the cause, but does not realize it as the cause? And the locality of those in lower spheres. These problems were thoroughly discussed by the circle before opening the preliminaries. In fact, however, this feature of discussing various problems of ethics and spiritualism and science by the circle has become part of the opening exercises. This is followed by reading the secretary's report of previous seance, comments, consideration and passing thereon, then retiring to seance room, seating circle, medium entranced in cabinet, music box in charge of Mrs. Emma, put to going and kept wound by her. The spirit Red Feather generally entrances Mrs. Abba, and keeps almost a constant amusing conversation about what is transpiring in the seance room, and the passing of the spirits upon the secretary's report concludes the opening exercises, and the regular program of the spirits for the evening begins and ensues to its finish. On this occasion the program was as follows, beginning with a typewritten message dictated by the spirit Dr. Reed, in the following words, to wit, 558. Is it right for us to forgive those who injure us? Is an oft-repeated question. I will give you a few of the impressions I have gained in spirit life upon this question, and leave you to answer the question for yourselves. A. If you cherish feelings of revenge against others, you do yourself an injustice, for thoughts of revenge leave their imprint upon soul and body alike. You may say that this statement is absurd, because you have not reached that degree of unfoldment that enables you to read the lines that emotions of all kinds leave upon the countenance of everyone. Repeated thoughts of revenge will make such a deep impression upon the sensitive gray matter of the brain that it will take years to eradicate them from the mind, even after the change of death has passed. We knows that thoughts of other days often return unbidden, and in that case, do not dwell upon them, banish the unpleasant ones as rapidly as possible. The half-forgotten strains of music, or the scent of a flower, will often cause old scenes to reappear. The human mind is a most wonderful thing, and I know of nothing that has such a power to blight it as thoughts of revenge. B. When you are angry, a change occurs in the nervous centers and is communicated to all parts of the body. You are never so out of harmony with the universe as when you are angry. If you would only be calm enough to reason, you would readily perceive that anger does more harm to yourself than to anyone else. 559. The man who murders another has taken the earth life from his victim, and by so doing has placed himself in darkened conditions where he must suffer for years. People who make others unhappy are never happy themselves. You may think they are happy, but deep within their souls they are suffering hour after hour. A spirit who had committed a heinous crime that cost him his life, told me that he had invented a mode of punishment that put a burning hell to rout, and I, of course, inquired what his plan was, and it was simply this: to have a life-sized picture of the murderer's victim placed upon every wall in his cell. He thought that these pictured faces would prove to be worse than any hell to the poor wretch. He, himself, was haunted for years by the face of his victim, not painted upon canvas, but so imprinted upon the sensorium that he could not escape from it. A man or woman need not commit a crime for it to leave its imprint upon mind and body. In fact, one who kills another in a fit of passion, without any forethought, will not bear as much imprint as a person who constantly premeditates murder but does not actually commit it. 560. I trust you may so develop that when anyone injures you, you will not even dream of revenge. Unwelcome visitors soon grow tired of intruding, and so it is with unwelcome thoughts. Banish all thoughts of revenge. It is a two-edged sword that had better be relegated to the garret as an out-of-date article that has no place in the progressive world. 561. If given time, matters will adjust themselves. The pendulum swings just as far in one direction as in the other. Have a little patience and don't waste both vital and spiritual forces battling against the inevitable. I do not mean by this for you to put yourself in the way of every passing storm, to be tossed back and forth. If the storm comes your way, bend and let it pass over you, and don't try, with your puny strength, to beat back the storms of life. If your path lies in the track of many storms, take that as an omen that your spirit needs the necessary discipline that comes with them, and with a light heart, journey on, until sky and river seem to meet. 562. And when the ferryman Death heeds the warning call, and makes ready to ferry you across the river, you will see the golden sunlight as it shines upon his snow-white locks and lightens his face with a smile, and the dark waters will appear clear and deep, and soft breezes will gently fan your brow and sing to you of the joys that await you upon the farther shore. 563. If you choose to look upon the dark side, when you reach the river of death, it will be storm-tossed. The waves will lash in fury against the shore, and the ferryman will appear as a grinning skeleton, wrapped in all the black trappings of death, and the winds will moan sad songs of the many sorrows that await you upon the other side. 564. It is sweet to forgive, and if you truly forgive, you will never think of it as a wrong, but as an experience that it is well you have had in order that you may feel for others. Your forgiving a wrong does not lessen, in any degree, the punishment the wrongdoer will receive, but it does remove from you a heavy load.